I'm here in Birmingham with Ozzy Blossom and Miss Brown, who are all going to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about their stories. Miss Brown.
Oh, well, whatever you want to know, just ask the question and I will... My name is Leonora Brown. I'm from Jamaica, parish of Portland. Yeah.
And what year were you born?
I was born in year 34.
Thank you. Blossom?
My name is Blossom. I'm from Jamaica, parish of Clarendon. Date of birth, 21st of April, 1949.
Thank you.
My name's Oswald Cole. I was born in Birmingham, England. I am a Windrush baby.
Okay, fantastic. So first of all, when did you, Miss Brown and Blossom, when did you arrive in the UK? Can you remember anything about your journey to the UK?
Yes. Yes, I arrived in England in 1958. The 19th of January was a very cold wintry morning. We landed at Liverpool Dock and I was so surprised to see all this, what are you looking at? The fog and everything. I didn't used to those sort of thing, but really, it was so cold, dismal, dark, and I says to myself, oh dear, is this England?
And Blossom, can you remember how you came to the UK?
I came up 1964, August, with my brother, both of us, and I didn't like the place. We were crying, we wanted to go back home. Because I didn't like the houses, they all joined up together, like, you know, and all this smoke coming out the roof. We didn't like it.
And how old were you at the time?
15.
You were 15. Mm-hmm. And Miss Brown, how old were you?
I was 24.
Okay. So what brought you to the UK?
Well, I wanted to explore and know England, and my partner was here before me and he sent for me to join him in this country.
And did you travel on your own or did you come with him?
No, we came on a ship, I call it. Most people saying boat, it's ship. SS Auriga, it's an Italian ship, like. It was very nice on board, you know, and enjoyed my journey. It was a bit rough, but on the sea. But they treat us so lovely and nice and kind. And everything you can get on land, you get it on the ship coming over to England. And we docked in Liverpool, as I said.
And Blossom, how did you travel to the UK?
With my brother and BOAC. Have you ever heard of
that? It's the old airline, right?
Yeah.
British. British Airways.
Fantastic. Ozzy, tell us about your story.
My story is totally different because I'm a product of Windrush. So, I was born in 1963. My recollection is that my mother came here in 62. I'm not sure if she took a boat or took a plane. They never did say how they got here. I think my father came here by boat.
Did they travel together?
No. travelled independently. So they met here.
Okay.
They met here. That's why I was born so soon after them actually coming to the country, which always surprised me. I thought, well, if you came in 62 and I was born in 63, they met quite pretty, and I got to find out that the property that they were renting, that's where they met at. So they had back then, when people came over, housing was difficult. Mm-hmm. So you had to rent. Normally there were big houses with multiple rooms, and they would be rented out to people of colour, Irish, etc., etc., in the tenement areas. So when Miss Brown and Blossom spoke about the smoke and the closeness of the tenement yard, that's the environment that we grew up in, even as a child, because that's where my parents grew me up.
And which part of that? Was that in Birmingham?
Birmingham. That was Borsal Heath.
Borsal Heath. And what about...
I was in Lausanne.
In Birmingham, I was at Edgbaston.
Okay.
She later on we came to in Edgbaston.
And what memories do you have at that time? Did you settle first in Birmingham, or did you?
I did. But at first, when I came home to this apartment, it wasn't my husband at the time. We had our own apartment. It's a lot of us live in the same building, but different apartment, you know. And I can remember when the first morning, I saw this lovely white thing outside, and it says the snow. So beautiful. And silly me went out there playing it. And, you know, it was so nice and fluffy. I was playing the airplane. I wasn't cold at the time because it just come from a hot country. And I wasn't feeling the cold as much as, you know, it just coming from. I says, oh, my God, I was there for nearly an hour playing in the snow. And when the other people, they saw me all the time, they said, you're crazy. What are you doing out there? You catch a cold to your death. I said, no, I'm not cold. And I thought it was snowball like we used to have back home. You shear the ice. I don't know if you go out there and notice, though. They shear the ice and it's so fluffy. And we call it snowball when they put the syrup on it. So I thought it was something like that out there. Playing away, I said, oh, I could have something. It was so lovely. I said, oh, my God, where so many snowballs come from? It was so lovely to see it on the ground. And like the children they do now today, young ones, they're playing it. I go out there, I was playing away. It was a good experience at the time, but little after that, I paid for it because my fingers, they gone numb and cramp and everything, and start to develop this thing they said, chilblain. You get that chilblain from the frost and cold.
So what memories do you have of when you were living in Jamaica? What were you told about the UK, that was, what expectations did you have that were very different?
England was beautiful, they said, and a lot of work, jobs to do, and lovely country. From school, I learned it in my book, from school. Far away land, England. Want to go and know this England. And when we came, it was nice and good at first, but after that, things changes a lot. We experience a lot, a whole lot of prejudice. from work places, everywhere you can think of, you go to, even going on the buses, because you have to form this long queue, and we now didn't do those things back home. They're doing it now, but you got to go into a queue, and we didn't know, and everybody come and they just push you out the way, push you there, push, get in the queue.
Blossom, did you go to school here in Birmingham?
Well, when I left Jamaica at 15, I finished school in Jamaica, 15. But when you come back here, you have to go back to school.
Yeah.
Yeah, 16, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah,
you go. And my mom, they should have put me in college, not send me back to school. And, oh, my God, the teachers, they were prejudiced.
What school did you go to?
There was a school off the Lozelle, somewhere down there. I forget, Anglis there, something like that. And the teachers, they were very prejudiced. They didn't teach us blacks nothing.
Prejudice in what way? What memories?
You know, don't treat us bad. Yeah.
And were there lots of children from the Caribbean at your school?
Yeah, quite a few girls.
And where did they live?
Ansburg, most of them.
Okay. Yeah. Ozzy, what about your memories of school?
Well, my memories of school was multicultural in the 60s. You got prejudices across the board. But again, it was individual, it wasn't institutional. Socializing, you could suffer racism. I remember when we used to go into the city centre as young men, having to run away from the skinheads who were in cahoots with the Teddy Boys, but they always saw the black people as people to be vilified, so we ended up running away. Those are my memories of youth. I think I probably got what my mother probably experienced, but differently, because of the time frame, and my mom being a Christian, etc. She would have shunned away from where she would have come across the prejudices and racism and stuff like that, where a lot of people went into the church, where you wouldn't see racism and stuff like that. So I think I would have had the knock-on effect of any prejudices that my mum didn't experience, just because of the time frame. I think a lot of older generation eventually ignored it, ignored the anti-feeling that was across, and then it became accepted that we were here to stay. Because I was worried, even as a young man, I remember thinking about whether my mother was naturalized, because you had to be naturalized to allow your children to stay in the country. And at that time, the government was throwing out nationalization to people from the Windrush who hadn't sorted their papers out.
So you remember what year that was, more or less, when you started hearing about naturalisation?
'70s.
And how old would you have been?
I was 14, 15. 2014-15, the government did it twice, where they appealed to people of the Windrush generation to get naturalised.
And can you remember where you heard those appeals? Was it on the radio? Was it?
Yeah, that,
where did you find out about
it? The government were doing appeals, i.e. TV at the time, and radio. And I remember saying to my mum, have you signed the papers for naturalisation? Because I was worried, well, if you haven't, and the government recant what it's saying, it will mean that we're not British citizens. And eventually, from what I gather, she did do it. She didn't do it on the first occasion. She did it on the second, when they did a second round of naturalisation.
Can you remember where they were, where people did that? Were they being asked to go to
they would have been sent the documents, and they would have had to take it to Government House.
Okay. And what about you ladies? Do
yeah,
you remember?
We don't know, me and my husband at the time. We don't know what.
What memories do you have about that, though?
Nationally,
How did you hear about it? Was it from...
It comes on the TV and things announce it and let you know that you need to get yourself nationalised and things like that. Get the farm and fill it in. And I think we paid, I think it was about 60-something
mm-hmm.
pound at the
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember what year that was?
Late 70s, I think, going. Mm. Yeah, well, I had mine, my husband had this. We get it nationalised and we got the document. We had our document.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Blossom?
Yeah, I've got mine upstairs because they told us that if we didn't get it, we had to go home.
But did you go to any meeting? Like, did you hear about any meetings or were there any information groups?
No,
about
no,
it?
Really, no.
It was on the television.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you feel about being told that you had to naturalise?
Well, I just said, well, if it's something we got to do.
You
haven't got much choice in it. If you need to stay in the country and you need to do it, you just have to get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was a Windrush baby.
Mm.
So if it wasn't signed,
mm-hmm.
the likelihood is I would have been deported.
Yeah.
My brother would have probably been deported because we weren't naturalized citizens of the country. So it being signed had a knock-on effect for us moving forward. Hence the problems that people have had over the years now who obviously didn't sign their naturalisations or didn't hear about signing their naturalisations.
Okay, so before we talk about that a bit more, I wanted to know what documents were you asked to use to naturalise? Can you remember what you took?
They sent you a form too, and you fill it in.
Mm.
Did you have to send off a copy of your passport?
Yes.
And what passport did you have at the time? Can you remember?
We had a Jamaican passport, and then when you get nationalised, whatever, you got your British passport. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Black book. The black book
we
is
We come
the,
with the black
book. The black book.
But I mean, when you get your nationalised, gone through, sign and go through, you get your British passport. And that's, you know, you are a citizen of British.
Of the British Commonwealth. It was a lot easier back in the day.
It wasn't anything too hard.
Jamaica became independent in 1962, right?
Yeah.
And then there are a number of different laws and legislations that were
brought
in that then basically changed the status of people from the Commonwealth. Can you remember, did you have discussions about that with family members or with peers? Or
No.
Or was it just something that was just...
I just sent for my passport a few weeks ago, and it didn't take a week. I've got the real British passport now, not the I've got Northern Ireland and British passport. No, not common. What's the name? We was in. Gotta cut it out now, a common market thing like. So I got the real one.
I think that issue is more discussed here than it would have been discussed there. And even if it was discussed here, I think it would only have ever been discussed if there were issues arising from it. Nobody had a problem until somebody felt that there was a problem with Reed Rush.
So I'd be how many times did any of you travel since, well, during your time in the UK? Did you, for example, travel regularly back and forth to Jamaica or to other places?
Different countries, yeah. Those, really.
Yeah,
Jamaica, America, went to Spain, France, wherever you want.
So did you ever experience holiday. Did you ever experience any issues then with...
With the passport?
Yeah, with your passport.
No, not at all.
So once you naturalise, you got the British passport.
As long as you got that, that's it. That's all they need. Stamped it. I just got mine 2 weeks ago.
You renewed it 2 weeks ago. Once. And how was that process? What did you have to do?
Oh, that in a week, they send it back to me.
Okay.
But no problem.
And Errol as well. Errol.
Yeah.
It's a lot more straightforward now, but I think the questions and the answers and the things that are needed to get these things are quicker.
Yeah, they got through quicker. These electronic...
Now it's not an issue of colour.
No.
Whether you have travel documents or not. So the goalposts have shifted from the days of Windrush where... It seemed as if it was a colour issue because it was mainly black people that were being brought across. There was never anything said about Asians who also were brought across for work and stuff like that.
The same.
Okay.
But their story doesn't seem to be as tainted as ours.
So why do you think... what do you know about the Windrush scandal? When it hit headlines in 2018, it hit the front pages. Were you aware of the scandal? Was it something that was? What was your reaction basically when you heard about it?
I didn't know much about it. I didn't experience nothing like that to do with Windrush. I didn't know nothing about it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe those people that comes up. England in the very, very early days, you see. So I have nothing to do with me, Windrush.
What about you, Ozzy? What reaction did you have?
The reaction that I had when I saw it unfold was, there goes people that didn't sign the paperwork when they were supposed to. And now... Because the government is looking for who people are and where they came from, and there is no trail, and the government's issue is based on immigration. I think the Windrush issue was to poke a bear. It was there to be poked. I think the immigration thing was a bigger thing than Windrush. Windrush wasn't an immigration problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an oversight that hadn't been rectified. That's all. That's all. It hadn't been rectified. Because there are people who came on the same boats that haven't had to go back because they naturalized.
Mm.
Now, it may be down to education why some folk didn't sign on the dotted line, etc. So when the issue of immigration come up, you've got no proof of who you are and where you are, etc. I was a bit annoyed at the way the government treated it, because the government knew who was who, because it had invited the people to come across. So it was easy to cross-reference who was who. And to think, well, after all of this time, we haven't moved forward in our race relations. Because it was, the onus is on the government to make sure that the citizens that it brings in, it caters for, and it accounts for. Not showing accountability, you don't blame the citizens for not accounting for themselves. But this is what it has led people of Windrush to feel inferior in knowing that they were asked to come. My mum, she was probably asked to come. My dad was probably asked to come.
In what way asked to come? Are you talking about recruitment?
Yeah, in recruitment, in labour force.
Recruiting.
Nursing, because yes. I know that my mum, she did auxiliary stuff. My dad, he was in factory. So this is where...
Recruiting.
This is where we know that they need, that the Commonwealth needed its workforce, because its workforce was lacking. So when the invitations came, it was to fill in the spots within the nursing, within transport, trains, buses. So there were areas in which they needed assistance, I would say.
And Miss Brown and Blossom, do you have any memories of seeing recruiters in Jamaica or hearing about the British government coming to
Yes, because that's the way my partner came up in this country.
So tell me about that.
Well, they were recruiting people to come to England to work, as Oswald said, to fill in his position that left empty and nobody wanted to do it. He came here and he works on the railway. And I work in the hospital. He works on the railway, and they were so shortage of labour those days. And they want to build back England after the war.
Yeah.
You get me? So they want to build back the country. And they haven't got enough people, because the people them did not want to do certain jobs, the English. They did not want to work in certain industry or do certain jobs, which you all know. And we came here, whosoever, your parents, you said, well, my partner came, then I came after. And we fit into these positions.
What did you work in? What areas did you work in?
Oh, my God, every work industry you can think, hospital, factories, hotel, you name it, just to make ends meet. Anywhere the job is, we are there doing it. And it was really hard and rough.
And how did you
look? We get the worst of the job.
How did you look for work? Was it word of mouth?
It was easy those days. Very easy. You go to the labor exchange, you sign on, and they can send you to different job. Or you walk, we walk in the snow, the cold, and you knock at this, you see where they need it, people need it, put out on the door, labor are wanted, cleaners, this and whatever, they advertise it, and you go and you knock on that door, and they let you in. And you sit down and they interview you. You can just walk from one job to the other. With so much jobs going. But those days, you know how much I work for? £4 for 40 hours a week. £4 a week. You tell me now who'd want that. Not even £4 an hour now.
And when you went to work at that time, did they ask for you to show your passport or to show?
No, you take your passport at the time. Most of us take our passport with us.
And Blossom, what was your work?
When I came up, my mom took me to the, what do they call it?
Exchange
for
labor.
Young people.
Them a youth club? No.
No, not club. Place for them to find place for you to work, young
kids. A job centre?
Unemployment.
Something like that.
Employment.
And what I wanted, the guy told me that I have to go to Raleigh to work.
Mm.
Yeah, I wanted to go into nursing.
Oh.
And he said I should go and work in Raleigh. You know, the bike.
The bush bike.
Yeah.
The bush bike factory. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They were very prejudiced.
Yeah, prejudiced. They don't want you to go. You know?
Into iron, you must stay down in the...
Yeah.
Do the dirty work, as we call it.
Then I've been doing laundry and then working hospital.
Cleaning.
Auxiliary.
Yeah, those.
Summerfield.
What about transport to work and back? How did you get to work?
The buses.
Buses.
Yeah. Oh, my God, the buses. They were crammed those days. And you know, in them early 60s, well, you didn't born. Ida as well. He born and Blossom came in. It was, you got to pack everything. You got to come out and lead the buses. People come out the bus up to lead the driver because it was so dark and it was such a hard time we've been through. You see, we here, especially your younger generation, but especially me, wasn't easy at all.
And Miss Brown, you were going to tell me about the working conditions.
It was very bad at those days for you, the black people that come in this country. You get the worst and worst of the job to do. Some jobs I work into, oh my God, I can't even explain it. I can remember I was working at this place in Ackley area, Great Hampton Street, somewhere around those areas, where we were making, like, you know, those cars that they use on the playground in them amusements and places, like Blackpool, all those places. Bumper car was working on those cars. And I tell you something, the fiberglass that we got to use, like a fiberglass, we got to use it on the liquid, we have this terrible liquid thing to use. I can't explain it, but I tell you something, it eats you for months and months.
The fiberglass,
and those things were dangerous, and we didn't know, and they didn't give you no protection at all. When we have lunchtime, we had to make our own liquid seat on top of some of the containers that they use, put our old coat on it, and you sit and have your lunch in that fiberglass, and it's all out in your mouth, itching. We went through hell. When you go home at night, you got to strip off all those working clothes and get marked. In those days, no shower, mainly, you have to have a bath. And wash our butt into a big tin.
The PL.
You remember the PL, everybody?
Oh, my God, yes, man.
It was rough. Yeah, and the liquid stuff, I forget what I call it now, but is it to make sure the car, the thing. And the next day when you go in, the men, they take it out the mold. And you see the real job. That was good when you can see the job. The end product. The job that you done. Really rough. Nowhere to sit and have something to eat properly. You get no protection from all these fiberglass you've been you working on and brush after people. Brushing it.
Conditions was rough.
Really rough for us. Really, really rough, I'm telling you. Then I went to the hospital, one hospital to work, and I was the only black in the evening because having come and start having children, I have to do mostly evening job when my husband is at home sleeping to go on nights and all that. We fit in that way. And I said, when I go into the work in the evening, six of us as ladies working in that hospital canteen, and guess what? Most of the ladies, well, as you see, I don't really love tea to that from a child. They all will sit down having this tea, smoking, laughing, chatting even with the supervisor. And poor Leonora alone had to be doing all the work. And I says, oh my God, what's going on? I couldn't take it no more. Some nights I go home and I cried. But I go back the next day morning, same thing all over. And you know what happened one evening? I says, plug out that Hoover, because I got to clean up the dining area before they start to serve. Same like what they do here, similar. And I said, I plug out that Hoover, and I said, it's not going to work no longer. And I go straight into the dining where they sit, this big table having tea and smoking. I says, look, I'm not the only one here employed to do this job. You lot employed to do the job just like me. Why is it I am working my soul off out there and you sit drinking and smoking? And Mrs. Richard, the supervisor, really, take time, don't. He said, don't tell me nothing about take time. Is I alone doing this work? What happened to you lot? And I was, honestly, I was mad. And she said, okay. I said, everybody get up, fire off. Start to.
You start the ball.
Yeah. Flick it along, Lee. Flick it. I say, I'm not flicking nothing. I'm doing it the right way I used to do it. They draw the map or whatever. I say, nothing like that. I'm doing it the way I know how to do cleaning job. Flick it along. Just do that. Drag it along. And that's what they do. And I said, no way. I do my job the right way. The way I know it should be done. Mm-hmm. And from that day, Eve, until I left 20 years after I stayed there, everybody was like, becomes very close friends. And they come in and they do their job. I do my job. Mm. I couldn't put up with it anymore. I had to speak my mind. I says, no, not me alone. You come here for the money. I come here for it as well. And not just me alone working for you, lot working for your money. I'm working for my, but you're not doing nothing while I'm working.
So
it gets me, man.
So you saw a lot of injustices, basically.
The
working conditions were terrible.
That's like they are drinking tea and smoking.
You're talking about your white colleagues.
Yes, mainly white, just me as black.
Yeah.
You see, at the time, and I said, this not going to carry on no longer. I put in a stoppage and plug out the Hoover and I confronted them round the table with the supervisor, joining with them there.
And what happened? What was the outcome?
The changes. And then I used to go in. I had another shift I was doing in the same hospital. Used to go in to do all those sandwiches.
I got that.
You're going
to go in and do make all those sandwiches to sell out there those days. And they have a lot of conference where the doctors and nurses came from the QE and things like that.
So can I ask you, did either of you did you ever join a trade union?
Well, that's why I'm getting to you now. You get me now? I says, you know, we working from 9 till 3 and we feed in the pantry doing all these and we bread, do the bread on me own, everything out to pipi. I says, no, that was my job at the time, to make the sandwiches. And those days you didn't have machine like, you know, to help you to wrap it. And you have to wrap it yourself. And I work out. I says, no, I can't put up with this. So I went to the catering manager and I put it to him. And he didn't do nothing. And I says, you know what? I am going to take this to the union. I was in Newpey. I said, I'm going to take this to the union. And every one of the work ladies, they said to me, no, Lee, you can't do that. Don't you frighten, they'll sack you. I said, sack me. I know where I'm going and he sack me. I'm not frightened of reporting him, the catering man. I had to go and report him. And we had a meeting, and I had a union rep. We had a meeting in a big hall like this, with the union rep, the catering manager, myself, and 2 more men was Indiana lady. And when I explained my position to them, what I was going through, sun on my feet from 9 till 3, not even 5 minutes break to have a cup of tea or nothing. And he turned to Mr. Dalby, the time catering manager, and he says, the union rep, and he says, you are a bloody-minded man. Never forget that in my brain until now I'm so old.
So can I ask, being involved in a union,
yeah,
had you ever heard about trade unions in Jamaica? Was that something that you'd ever had
a discussion about?
Yeah, but
I wasn't really in work job at that time working in it. But older people have union thing like that. They did have it, but not as strong as in England here. You know what I'm saying?
So what was the outcome for you then?
The outcome, as he told him, off in front of me, and I said, yes. And I says, from then on, he said, you can have it. He said, you can have a 10 minutes tea break. And that's how it goes on. And I did have my cup, sit on my feet for a bit, have my food for a bit and have a 10 minutes tea break. And because he told him, no, she can't have even 10 minutes. You bloody-minded man, you shouldn't do that. And I said, from that, I said to myself, you, and you know something, we became... You know, some things, after all that, he didn't hold up nothing against me. We becomes very friendly. And that's how you got to speak your mind in those days
those
in the
days,
work
man.
Position. Mm-hmm. You got to speak your mind. As it continue and continue. I used to go home and cry at nights. Cry for the advantage I've been going through.
Thank you for that story. I think that's really, really important.
I'm telling you, it wasn't easy. I really cry. And don't let them see my children or my husband.
But you fought it as
I go in the bedroom and I shed tears.
Yeah, but you fought it and you spoke up about it.
Keep
as well.
Going back until I was stronger in myself 20 years.
So, Ozzy, I wanted to ask you about your parents. What did they do?
Well, mummy was similar. Mummy did auxiliary and cleaning. My father worked at a nuts and bolts factory for, I think it was a good 20 years until he retired. I'm sure my mum came across prejudices. Not that she really spoke of them, because she was a Christian, but you knew that she would have confronted prejudices, and sometimes when she related stories back regarding people and how she described them, like it would be one white person or one white woman or one white man. And you normally, when it was prefixed with the colour, there was normally something that went with that. It wasn't, oh, well, this white man did help me, or this white woman did help me. You would hear that, but very few. My mum probably, Black Miss Brown, she kept it close. You didn't see what oppression or so. She wouldn't let it show to me. As I got older, I could read between the lines as to what she had experienced. But I must confess, she kept those experiences from me. She didn't want us to know that she was getting maybe victimized or oppressed or whatsoever from society.
And why do you think people were really guarded about some of the experiences and issues that they had? Because a lot of people we've spoken to, they won't have shared this with their with their closest family members. Mm-hmm. And people who are affected, for example, with issues of documentation, even kept it, you know, very close, even when they were getting letters from the Home Office. Why do you think that people were afraid to speak out or to share some of their experiences? What do you think?
We didn't want to upset. No, we didn't want to upset the family, to let them know and hear what we've been going through. Mm. I was like that. Mm. I didn't want them to know. Yes. See me crying. No, I go up in the bedroom and I shed tears because it was so terrible. You know what you go, it's not, it wasn't, I've got another story as well.
Should we maybe hear a story from Blossom next?
Buddy, Blossom,
got,
you.
Have not. You got anything that you want to share?
Of course, Blossom has a story. She's thinking which one was that.
Sorry. She's not a very, you know, she like to.
She liked to listen.
She liked
to listen. She really liked for this.
Because even when we moved to Bartley Green, mm-hmm. in the 80s, we were very prejudiced up there. Yeah, they sat on the bus. Mm-hmm. They're pulling away from you in the seat.
I've been through that.
You know?
In Bartley Green?
Yes.
We've been through
and,
that.
And they say, little kids, go back to your country, monkey. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Black monkey.
Yeah.
You go back to your country. What did you come here for? We've been through hell, I'm telling you, Eve. Hell. But we were strong, grow stronger and stronger inside. The more they put it on us,
we
determined that we're not leaving this country until we want to are ready. Because we were.
We had rights. We had rights.
And you talked about, also, you did talk about the Teddy Boys as well, who were very big in Birmingham. Oh, right, yes.
Everywhere.
What do you guys remember about the Teddy Boys and about kind of, well, I mean, you had the Handsworth riots, obviously, as well.
The Teddies had their own issues because they had their social issues with the skinheads. So it was them, and with them, it was more a clash of styles. This wasn't the clash of colour.
Yeah, no.
Because skinhead and Teddy mm-hmm. is style, not colour. You got black Teddy and you have black skinhead.
And you also had the Birmingham music scene as well, which was like a hugely important, I don't know if any of you... Mm-hmm.
In what, the reggae?
Just in terms of... Yeah,
well,
kind of tackling, there were lots of efforts to kind of tackle racism. There were lots of, it was kind of, there was a lot going on basically, especially in the.
But in Birmingham, in my growing up as a young man, I faced it growing up as a young man. I faced what probably my mother didn't. And that was from the skinheads. The Teddies as such, the people and that didn't understand blacks. Blacks was an anomaly to them. They, who are these people? And it was something to dislike. And it was easy for to dislike us, sure, because you didn't understand us.
I can see Miss Brown.
What I'm saying to you as well, they didn't understand black, as you said. Just the majority may not, mm-hmm, but we used to get a lot of English, Canadian, American, German, mm-hmm, in our country, mm-hmm, and they get good treatment, mm-hmm, from, mm-hmm, our period. Mm-hmm. We kind of worship them, mm-hmm, right? Actually, saying words like that, they did not press. They were treated the best of the best, more than even us, mm-hmm, that born there, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
I know the majority might not know us as this black skin or what, but we didn't made ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's the way we were born, mm-hmm, and we cannot change it. Mm-hmm. We got to live like that together, mm-hmm, until the day come that we disappear.
Did people talk to you about, did people talk about the Commonwealth, for example? Was it something that was, or was it very much talking about the UK? Was there like kind of a knowledge of what the Commonwealth was? Britain's bigger role in the world.
We know, from my understanding, the Caribbean people know that Britain was big.
Mm. Yeah.
Britain did country.
We were part of the Commonwealth.
But we were part of it.
Yeah.
And I think my understanding is that we ran with that we are part of it.
Yes.
So you see the Windrush thing? We are part of it because we are part of the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm. That's why we're here. Yeah. If we weren't invited,
yeah,
we wouldn't be here. And if we would have been here, we would have been here in a different context than the one that's been discussed. Mm. So, black people, as far as I am aware, as a Windrush baby, feel obliged to be here and make this country part of the Commonwealth. Mm. Because it was.
And when you were at school in Jamaica, what were you told about the UK? Because you learnt a lot of, I would say, UK English, history.
Yeah, we did.
And
we did.
Literature reading. What were you taught about Jamaica?
About Jamaica?
In school, what were you taught about Jamaica?
You mean England?
When you were in school in Jamaica, yeah, as a child,
yeah, what did they teach you about back
home? What did they teach you about where you were from?
Where were you born? No.
Well, we know we were born in Jamaica and beautiful sunny island. We weren't rich because we didn't have a lot of industries and things like that. Work, you know, condition wasn't as high as it is now. Everything changes now. Can get employment more. And that's all. And when we heard that Britain needs workers and the immigrating people to come over and work. We need work and we want to work and we love to work.
And what did you hear about? Did they teach about the royal family as well? And
royal
family.
Yeah.
Yeah. King and queen.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Queen, we sing.
Yeah, we sing daddy.
We have to sing that at school and rule Britannia. Britannia rules away. Britain never shall be saved.
Yes.
And no matter we thought about England a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And as you say, all those literature and all them thing that we read it in our school book. We go in the morning and you got to
say we had patronage.
Yeah.
We had patronage because it was put upon us.
Yes, yes.
As far as I am aware, mm-hmm, yeah, because I grew up listening to Queen's speech and all these things. Mm. Come Christmas and all these things. I wonder, Mom, Really? No. We have to listen to what she has to say. Okay. So, my mom, not so sure about my father, probably did. They bought into the patronage. Commonwealth people have to buy into the patronage.
Yeah.
So you have to buy into the royalty. Because that's what the Commonwealth used to portray. King and Queen. The King and Queen of England is coming to Jamaica. And to the Caribbean island.
We grow up on that.
We grow up that. That's
the King and Queen.
That's what made the invite to come to the UK.
Yeah.
So, because of that connect.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth connect.
Yeah.
And Blossom, how often have you been back to Jamaica?
Oh, so many times.
Do you try and travel back and forth regularly?
Yeah, not lately, but my parents, they were living in England. They immigrated back home. And then when they took sick, I used to go home often to care for them.
So when you came over when you were 15, did you come with your parents?
No, with my brother.
You came with your brother. And where were your parents then at that time?
They were here in England.
Okay. So who were you living with when you
my
were
my sister.
Okay. So how long were your parents in the UK then before you came to join them?
I was 10 when my dad came up and 12 when my mum. Mm.
So was the plan always to bring you to join them?
Not really, but you see, back home, when they leave the children back home, they don't care for them properly. So my mom was really upset and she wants her children over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're coming to the end of the interview. Is there anything that you would like to bring up that maybe we haven't discussed or talked about? Is there anything that you would really like to share?
No, it is.
Well, most of it.
You've heard, or you will have heard. You will hear tales of endeavour.
Mm. I just wondered if you knew anybody who was personally affected by the Windrush scandal, or if you'd heard stories of anybody.
No,
I don't really personally know anybody that affected.
Because again,
early on the TV.
You see. That would have been kept quiet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You haven't signed your papers.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been kept very hush hush.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, it would show the education of the people in concern that well, why didn't you sign
your documents
mm-hmm. when you had the opportunity? Now, if you wasn't that educated, that may have a knock-on effect as to why.
So were you surprised when you heard about it?
I did surprise.
Yes, because I was surprised at the attitude towards it, because it's something that could have been overseen.
Mm.
Allow it.
You're hungry now.
Mm-hmm.
Allow it. It could.
Yeah, I was surprised of it.
It could be
just
overlooked
blown out the
because of the
prosperous
time frame.
Yes.
You're talking about generation or two.
And
since this happened,
it set people in panic.
And you have people worried about
panicking
what they should do, what they should
they
do with their children.
They're going to deport them, Archie.
And
it
they
was
did deport people.
Terrible.
Blossom, what do you remember?
When?
About the hearing about the scandal.
Yeah.
I don't know, really.
She's not a bird. She don't like
because there was a guy in our church and he was 50 years old. And he was deported. He came here when he was 7. But the mom didn't
get him signed up on it.
Signed the paperwork.
Yeah.
That's the
sign. Some of them definitely as well grew up and really did not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to that now, what can you do?
It's a scandal, but is it really a scandal?
I go by the law and the rules. Whatever they said you got to do, I did.
I don't think it's a scandal. I think it's more of, you know what? People didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Yes, that's it as well.
That's all.
They take it slight.
And they've made it, because it may be black people, they've made it more than what it
is?
It really isn't. Because the numbers you are talking about within this scandal is minimal. Minimal. Just in the washer. Really and truly. It's a scandal, nonetheless. But no more than any greater scandal that's...
But what it does do is it highlights just how brutally the British government has treated...
It shouldn't have been like that anyway, you know.
The British government has a problem with immigration across the
board. And they're trying
to
take it out of us.
We were the first port of call,
yes,
to say, well, oh,
come on, world, come on.
If there's going to be any injustice, is you lot are going to feel it for us. If there's going to be any prejudice, it's you lot are going to feel it for us.
Don't know why.
So, to me, the Windrush thing, I don't really want to be a scapegoat for anything. I don't want to be a child of a scapegoat for anything. Yeah? My parents came, they did what they did, they blended into society,
yes,
they had their children, they grew their children up to be upstanding citizens,
yes,
etc. Part of the establishment. Not to fight the establishment. So, the Windrush, love it, but hate it.
Yeah, love it.
And those days
when
people coming to England... I remember in my district, they dress best clothes, I mean.
Yes.
And then in the suit, I've seen them on the telly.
Oh, yes.
Women,
no,
gloves,
we were
hat.
Poor, but we love our clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Fix yourself nicely.
Anything to dress up.
Yes, and we eat well, because I know it, even if you were poor and don't have the money, there's so many fruits and veg and food. You can't go hungry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
On that note, I think we're going to finish today.
Thank
you
so
much.
Yeah,
thank you for everything, guys.